This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, President Donald J. Trump nominates Judge Neil Gorsuch to fill the nearly year-long vacancy on the Supreme Court. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Mr. Trump announced his choice on January 31st at the White House, saying Gorsuch is a judge that the country needs badly, and comparing him to the late Justice Antonin Scalia, whose seat Gorsuch would be filling. The pick could tilt the ideological balance of the nation's highest court back to conservatives, a promise Mr. Trump made from the campaign trail as he aimed to attract fellow Republicans to his candidacy. Republicans immediately praised the choice, while Democrats, under pressure from their party's base to oppose the new administration, predicted a rough path to confirmation. The confirmation could indeed be contentious, following Republican refusal to hold confirmation hearings for former President Barack Obama's choice to fill the seat, Judge Merrick Garland. However, while decrying what he called unprecedented Republican obstructionism vis-a-vis Merrick Garland's nomination, Neil Katyal, who was acting Solicitor General in the Obama administration, has actually praised Judge Neil Gorsuch as someone who would, quote, restore confidence in the rule of law, unquote. In an opinion editorial for the New York Times, Katyal said that Gorsuch's years on the bench reveal a commitment to judicial independence. Judge Neil Gorsuch, 49 years old, is a well-established conservative appointed by then-President George W. Bush to the Denver, Colorado-based 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Analysts say he has an impressive legal pedigree, having served as a law clerk for former Supreme Court Justice Brian White and current Justice Anthony Kennedy. Gorsuch has been outspoken about the need for courts to have a limited role in American life, and he has criticized what he calls disproportionate powers taken on by federal agencies. However, just this week, Judge Gorsuch weighed in on President Donald Trump's characterization of District Judge James Robar as a, quote, so-called judge, unquote, because Robar put a hold on Mr. Trump's executive order temporarily banning travel from 7 Muslim-majority countries. Gorsuch told Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal that the president's sharp criticism of the judiciary was demoralizing and disheartening. Court watchers may interpret this statement as an indication of Gorsuch's commitment to judicial independence, a sign that he will not compromise principle to favor the president who appointed him. Republicans currently hold a 52-44 majority over the Democrats in the Senate. It would take just 51 votes to confirm Gorsuch, unless Democrats choose to filibuster the nomination, in which case 60 votes would be required to overcome the action. Well, with us to discuss the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch to fill the vacancy left by Justice Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court are two distinguished constitutional experts. Elizabeth Slattery is a legal fellow at the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation, and that's a conservative policy group based here in Washington. And Jeffrey Rosen, he is president and CEO of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, and that's an agency created by Congress to publish nonpartisan information on the Constitution. And Jeffrey is also a professor of law at George Washington University Law School. Elizabeth Slattery joins me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Jeffrey Rosen joins us from a studio from the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Wonderful to be back.
Well, Elizabeth, let me begin with you. Basically, get your reaction to this choice of Neil Gorsuch.
I think President Trump hit it out of the park. Judge Gorsuch is a fantastic choice. He has sterling academic credentials. He worked for the Department of Justice. He was number 3 at the Department of Justice. He's served for nearly a decade on the Denver-based 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. He's highly regarded by his judicial colleagues, and I couldn't be more pleased with the choice.
Jeffrey Rosen, hit it out of the park. How do you see this choice of Neil Gorsuch to fill the vacancy?
Yes, I think that's a very good phrase. I agree that Judge Gorsuch was a superb choice. He is one of the most respected conservative legal intellectuals on the bench. He has the ability to transform the legal debate by pursuing a clear vision of textualism and originalism. Those are methods of constitutional interpretation. But in some ways, he could differ in interesting ways from Justice Antonin Scalia. Justice Scalia was more of a Hamiltonian. He was very deferential to federal power, whereas Judge Gorsuch is more of a Jeffersonian. He's more skeptical of administrative agencies and broad federal regulations and more protective of individual liberty and states' rights. So I think a big question for the hearings, of course, will be, will Judge Gorsuch be willing to check President Trump if the president exceeds his constitutional bounds? And on that score, I'm confident that he will. His comments about the president's attacks on judges being disheartening are just one indication of his devotion to follow the Constitution, even when it diverges from his political views.
Well, back to you, Elizabeth, since you're both pretty much in agreement on Judge Gorsuch's qualifications and the fact that he would be a very good justice. Give us some sense of how you think this nomination goes forward, you know, a sense of the mechanics, because we do have some skeptics, particularly among the Democrats, who are still hurting, or rather sort of smarting, you know, from not having been able to have hearings for Judge Merrick Garland, who was President Obama's nominee. What do you expect the impediments might be going forward?
Sure. So several of the Senate Democrats come out and said that they don't believe that Judge Gorsuch is in the mainstream. You know, but when we have people like a high-ranking official from the Obama administration, such as Neil Katyal, who you mentioned, praising his qualifications, I think the argument is really going to come down to the process and politics in the Senate rather than a fight over Gorsuch, the nominee, and his jurisprudence. You know, in many ways, he does line up with Justice Scalia and his jurisprudence, such as areas including criminal law and religious liberty and many other areas. But there is a stark sort of difference from Justice Scalia in his willingness to be skeptical of administrative agencies and maybe look at a 1980-era Supreme Court decision called Chevron and potentially overturn that.
Turning back to you, Jeffrey Rosen, what do you see as the way forward now in terms of the process and politics in the Senate, given what happened with President Obama's nominee, Judge Garland, and the fact that many Senate Democrats simply are still very upset about the process?
Well, I certainly sympathize with their distress and understand their feeling that it was unfair that Judge Garland didn't get a hearing, since previously no nominee since Louis Brandeis had waited so long for a hearing. Nevertheless, all that said, the Democrats are in a bit of a political bind. They don't have a lot of good choices. They could choose to exercise the filibuster this time around, but Republicans have made clear that they would blow up the filibuster in response. They could hold the filibuster in their back pocket and hope to exercise it if President Trump gets another nominee, but it might be blown up the second time. So the bottom line is that Judge Gorsuch is likely to be confirmed, and therefore I think the Democrats really could most constructively use the hearing as a substantive inquiry into his judicial philosophy, to what degree he is in fact willing to check unconstitutional excesses by the president and Congress, his views of the regulatory state. There's certainly a lot of room for a vigorous constitutional debate about whether the Democrats agree with Judge Gorsuch's Jeffersonian originalism, and by really digging into those questions, they could educate the country in a really important constitutional way.
Well, back to you here in the studio, Elizabeth Slattery. For example, with regard to Judge Gorsuch's comment about President Trump's characterization of the judge in Washington who put a stay on his executive order saying he was a so-called judge, you know, some are calling for Judge Gorsuch to publicly condemn these what are considered anti-judge remarks of President Trump to show that he truly is independent. What do you think? Should he, you know, publicly make that statement, since we know of this statement through Senator Blumenthal's office?
At the outset, I'd like to point out that there was a statement that came out indicating that Judge Gorsuch's remarks may have been taken a little bit out of context. He was speaking not specifically about what President Trump has said, but generally that presidents should not sort of impugn the motives of judges. And I absolutely agree that judges should be impartial and they should be independent. And I don't think that Judge Gorsuch should be forced into making any sort of political statement, though. I don't think that would be a very good precedent for him going forward as a justice on the Supreme Court.
How do you see that, Jeffrey Rosen?
Well, I think the question of whether a justice is willing to enforce constitutional limits on the president is a very basic question that judges should be willing to discuss. Historically, of course, not in terms of current cases. There are all sorts of really important clashes between the president and Congress, maybe most famously President Harry Truman's effort to seize the steel mills using his commander-in-chief authority, which the Supreme Court repudiated, including justices that he himself had appointed. So I think asking Judge Gorsuch about those kind of cases and what he thinks of them and what he thinks the court's role is in enforcing constitutional limitations is completely within bounds. And I think there's a very important national debate to be had about whether President Trump was acting in a unique and unprecedented manner and impugning the motives of individual judges. If you look at history, even the presidents who have been most critical of the judiciary, and perhaps the best example would be President Trump's hero, Andrew Jackson, whose portrait hangs in the Oval Office. Jackson reportedly said of a decision he disagreed with by Chief Justice John Marshall, "John Marshall has made his decision, now let him enforce it." And yet when you look at the record, Jackson avoided an open conflict with Marshall. He diffused the political conflict by persuading the state of Georgia to release missionaries whom Marshall had ordered freed. And in the end of his life, Jackson actually praised Marshall for his contributions to American jurisprudence and called for federal laws to enforce the Supreme Court's mandate. So there's a very important national debate to be had. I don't really think it's fair to expect Judge Gorsuch to be at the center of it because he's limited in what he can say. But his views on the constitutional relationship between the courts, the president, and Congress are certainly fair game.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Elizabeth Slattery. She's a legal fellow at the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation, a conservative policy group based here in Washington. And Jeffrey Rosen, from whom you just heard, he's president and CEO of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. And Jeffrey is also a professor of law at George Washington University Law School and author of Louis D. Brandeis, American Prophet. And we're discussing the politics and substance surrounding President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castillo VOA or connect with us on Facebook. And here's a shout out to Yomi Ige. He's a loyal listener from Ibadan, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to Elizabeth Slattery here in the studio to talk more about President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Judge Neil Gorsuch. Talk about what else we know about him from his previous decisions on the circuit court and other writings that he has done.
Sure. So based on his many decisions, we know that he follows the law and the Constitution where they take him. He's not an outcome-oriented jurist, and that's exactly what we need on the Supreme Court. For example, and this is an area where he has in common with Justice Scalia, he believes that criminal laws should be read narrowly in favor of criminal defendants, and that's led him to rule in favor of even the most heinous criminal defendants, where, you know, you might otherwise think he wouldn't necessarily like them. And, you know, he's ruled to against government when it's violated basic constitutional protections, like our Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable searches and seizures. And he also has an extraordinary record of upholding religious freedom for all Americans, whether or not they have beliefs that are considered politically correct or popular. This goes from business owners to prisoners who are seeking accommodations to practice their faith in prison.
Well, let me get back to you, Jeffrey Rosen, to add or subtract to what Elizabeth said, because there are some concerns, again, on part of Senate Democrats, who say, for example, with respect to religious freedom, that Judge Gorsuch voted twice to deny contraceptive coverage to women, elevating a corporation's religious beliefs over women's health care, for example. That's one. And others say, you know, that they're concerned that decisions that favor corporate interests at the expense of American workers might be part of Judge Gorsuch's mindset.
Yes, I think there are certainly many grounds for Senate Democrats to really dig in. His views on corporations and religious liberty were ultimately affirmed by the Supreme Court, so he wouldn't change the balance of the court on that question. But there's especially acute interest in his views about the future of reproductive freedom and indeed of Roe v. Wade. And I think there'll be a lot of attention paid in the hearings, as there should, on his really interesting book, which I encourage listeners to read because it's short, it's beautifully written. It's called The Future of Assisted Suicide and Euthanasia. It was published in 2006. the book really shows Gorsuch's intellectual ambition. He went from a lucrative law partnership to Oxford on a Marshall scholarship to write a dissertation that ultimately became the book. And the book is a very powerful defense from a natural law perspective of the idea that life has intrinsic value and that intentionally taking it is always wrong. And Judge Gorsuch uses that principle to defend existing laws forbidding assisted suicide, but it certainly would be interesting to tease out the implications of that view for cases like Roe v. Wade. He may be reluctant to answer, but it's worth trying. And the book just shows Gorsuch's intellectual ambition, the fact that he's a true legal intellectual. And because his views in some ways go further than Justice Scalia, Elizabeth is absolutely right about those Fourth Amendment cases where he and Justice Scalia were willing to restrict government power. But in this case, involving assisted suicide, Justice Scalia had invoked a federal law preempting Oregon's assisted suicide law on the grounds that federal power deserved deference. Judge Gorsuch has a rather more sweeping possible rationale that the right to life is so fundamental that it should be respected regardless of federal law to the contrary. So that difference is worth teasing out, and anything that Judge Gorsuch would say on those issues would be illuminating.
Well, turning back to you, Elizabeth Slattery, you know, any nomination to the Supreme Court is a consequential decision. There's no question about it. But we are talking about replacing a conservative, Justice Antonin Scalia, with another, one could call Judge Gorsuch a conservative. So in a sense, it won't really affect the composition of the court. But as you both indicated, he has a bit of a different style, perhaps interact with other justices differently that might make a difference. I mean, how do you see, should he be confirmed, his behavior on the court, not just the decisions, but his interaction with the other justices and how that might affect decisions?
Well, I would say that however similar Neil Gorsuch is to Antonin Scalia, he's not going to be a one-to-one trade for Scalia. He could be more or less persuasive in getting others to join along with his opinions. Given his relationship with Justice Kennedy, he may be able to persuade Kennedy to come along with the conservatives, or that may backfire. And I think it's just interesting to note for listeners that I believe if Gorsuch is confirmed, this will be the first instance where we have a justice sitting with his former boss currently on the court. And, you know, changes in personnel at the court inevitably shift the balance ever so slightly. You know, for example, when Chief Justice Roberts and Alito joined the court, that's sort of when Kennedy emerged as the swing vote, because previously it had sort of been Sandra Day O'Connor. And so I think, you know, there are always going to be some sorts of changes when there is a change in personnel.
How do you see it, Jeffrey Rosen, you know, how Judge Gorsuch could, you know, change the dynamics on the court, even if he is basically a conservative replacing a conservative?
I think Elizabeth puts it very well, and she described how, on the one hand, that he might persuade Justice Kennedy to vote more often with the conservatives. Right now, Justice Kennedy is quite close to Justices Breyer and Kagan and some of the pragmatic liberals. So to the degree that he could win over his former boss, that would be an important shift. But as she says, it's hard to predict these matters, and the dynamic may play out differently. And another big question that many liberals are understandably concerned about is whether Justice Kennedy might be more likely to step down during a Trump administration because he trusts President Trump to appoint judges whom he trusts, like Neil Gorsuch. And that's one scenario. Another is that Justice Kennedy, obviously very shrewd and able of making smart calculations, might conclude, hey, there's no one else like Judge Gorsuch on President Trump's list. The next nominee is likely to be more willing to overturn some of my, that is Justice Kennedy's, totemic opinions, maybe involving marriage equality or individual liberty, and therefore he's not willing to strike down. So I think Elizabeth is right that this is hard to game out, this sort of armchair psychologizing of Justice Kennedy and how he might react to this nomination. But there's no doubt that the close personal relationship between them, as she says, will be significant, important, and I'm sure that they'll work well together.
Indeed, it will be very interesting to watch should Neil Gorsuch be confirmed. Well, back to you, Elizabeth Slattery. Jeff Rosen, of course, brought up the next big question, that what's at stake on the Supreme Court will depend on the next nomination, if and when, whether Kennedy or another justice decides to step down. So that leads us to ask, where do you see the court going? Do we have any signs, indication of any of the justices, whether Kennedy or any of the other more liberal justices? and the implications of that.
Well, Justice Ginsburg has said many times that she's not going anywhere. And, you know, more power to her.
You know, her reputation being...
Sure. So she has a reputation as sort of a lion of the left for the court. And, you know, she has reproductive rights have sort of been an important issue to her. You know, it's hard to say the direction that the court will take until we know who would be the next justice leaving. And historically, when they tend to step down, it tends to happen in the late spring that they announce they'll be leaving. So, you know, it's possible we could have an announcement shortly after, hopefully, Justice Gorsuch is confirmed.
How do you see it, Jeff Rosen, in the future?
Agreed. There's nothing less reliable, as suggested, than trying to predict Supreme Court retirements. Justice Ginsburg and the liberals will try to hang on as long as they can. We don't know what Justice Kennedy will do. And, you know, in the shrewd and immortal phrase, you know, time will tell. We'll see. Let's get through this nomination and
absolutely.
See what happens next.
One at a time.
Yeah,
speaking of which, do we have a timetable, Elizabeth? You know, hearings and when they will be scheduled, et cetera.
Senator Grassley, who's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said that he expected the hearings would be in mid-March, and he's hoping that the confirmation process will be complete by Easter. So that would be sometime in April.
Have you heard anything differently, Jeffrey Rosen?
No, that sounds right.
I think the goal was to have Gorsuch seated for the April argument term, the April sitting that's coming up.
Well, Elizabeth, what are we looking forward to in terms of cases before the Supreme Court? What types of cases will a full court now, only eight, but should Judge Gorsuch be confirmed, you know, the nine-member court, what are some of the consequential issues? And also, let's take into consideration President Trump, whose executive orders have started to become somewhat controversial, and one of which, the ban on travelers from seven predominantly Muslim countries, you know, may actually even reach the Supreme Court.
So much of the last 8 years of the court's jurisprudence was very reactionary cases, reacting to people challenging things that President Obama and his agencies were doing. So I imagine that the left will follow that similar playbook and challenge many things that President Trump and the Republican Congress will try to do. You know, an area that the court has shied away from in recent years after two pretty landmark decisions is the Second Amendment. In 2008 and 2010, there were decisions dealing with, you know, whether it recognizes a personal right to bear arms. And you know, the lower courts have sort of dealt with a whole host of issues related to that and sort of sketching out the outlines of that right and how it extends outside of the home and what it means for individuals. And so I think that's an area that the justices have shied away from. So potentially with another conservative or, you know, if there is another vacancy in the next few years and so we gain two more conservatives, that may be an area they're willing to tackle.
Well, the last word to you, Jeffrey Rosen, on cases you see coming before the Supreme Court and any special challenges posed by President Donald Trump and executive orders that might require Supreme Court attention.
Yes, that's just fascinating, that immigration ban case. Seems like it may be on a fast track to the court, given the speed with which the appellate court heard oral arguments. And if it does get to the Supreme Court, it will be very interesting to see whether the conservative justices, whom in the past have been deferential to the president when it comes to defining the borders, may be willing to check the president, both because of their concern about religious discrimination and in light of past cases, some of which they've joined, suggesting that laws infected by an animus against a particular religious group may raise constitutional difficulties. So I would not at all imagine that this is clearly a polarized 5-4 Republican against Democratic case, and given Judge Gorsuch's passionate statements about the importance of enforcing constitutional limitations on the president and Congress, it's even possible that he might side against President Trump if he decides to sit on this case and has the opportunity to do so.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Elizabeth Slattery. She's legal fellow at the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation, and Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming in.
It's great to be here.
And Jeffrey, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Zubair El Tayeb. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.